Hey everybody, it's Will here. Just a slight introduction to this week's show. It features our conversation with none other than the great Bill Corbett, who you may remember from a little show called Mystery Science Theater 3000. And for this episode, we knew we had to do a movie with Bill, and the movie we discussed is Hillary's America by filmmaker, entrepreneur, Christmas tree entrepreneur by filmmaker and Christmas tree entrepreneur Dinesh D'Souza. I think it fits in perfectly with both the Chapo and MST3K canon because it is both abominable and hilarious. So we had a lot of fun doing this with Bill. I want to thank him again for coming to the Trap Mansion and spending some time with us. We had a great time with him, and I think you guys are really going to like this episode. Bye. I was a little. We actually watched this movie for the first time last night, and I was a little worried going into it. I was like, "Oh Christ, what if it's just really boring and dry? We don't have anything to talk about." But man, oh man, I'm so glad.
Oh, it
delivered so well.
As soon as I saw the like 60-foot Stay Puft Marshmallow Man Hillary in the opening credits, I knew we were in for a good time.
It was so good.
What if the goal of the Democratic Party is to steal the most valuable thing the world has ever produced? What if their plan is to steal America?
I mean, actually, let's just begin with sort of the general observations about the movie. Like, I think the movie, it's easy to talk about because it sort of breaks down neatly into four quarters. There are sort of four parts of the movie, each with their own charms. But just overall, I guess my first reaction to this movie, this is the first Dinesh documentary I'd ever seen. And I guess my first reaction is that someone as ugly as Dinesh D'Souza would choose to put himself and his face so often in this movie is amazing to me. I mean, not even Michael Moore is that shameless in his documentaries.
Yeah, this was also my first D'Souza joint, and he is just aping Michael Moore. But when Michael Moore puts himself in his movies, it's funny because he's a big fat guy and he's eating in all the scenes and he's got shit on his shirt, and it's that's comic relief. When D'Souza shows up, he's just this elfin, overgrown college Republican.
This movie may not star Vincent Chase, but it definitely does have a turtle. And just the other thing is, just overall, he makes movies for people who have never seen a movie before. That was really the style of it. Like someone who, Matt, could you...
It's only for people whose last film experience was in a Nickelodeon. I mean, the film ends with a fireworks display.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, a fireworks display and someone singing the long version of the Star Spangled Banner with the weird lyrics about Hiberians or whatever. And it made me realize that this movie, Hillary's America, is the real life version of the movie From the Ring. In that everyone who saw it died 7 days later, only of old age.
When the rockets red glare, Greek people don't breathe air. By the way, we know some lawyers. If your grandparent in the nursing home was one of 5,000 people in America that saw Hillary's America and broke their hip standing up to salute the national anthem at the end, we want to represent you.
Yeah. Better call Saul.
Right? Better call Saul Alinsky.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect.
Episode title.
So the overall presentation in the movie is bizarre, just sort of really ham-fisted and poorly done. I think, Matt, you said it was the longest campaign ad ever made.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way that they talk about it, it's whole sections are just the Democratic Party did racism.
Yeah.
And it has the tone of a really bad campaign commercial.
You thought The Simpsons put that to bed, the sort of minor chord underscoring the commercial thing, but no, it was 75 minutes of that.
The other thing, like the content of the movie is also fascinating because like overall, it's interesting to watch this movie now, especially. This is a movie that came out this year, an artifact of the very recent past that is nonetheless stunningly out of whack with present day reality on a number of levels. Like not only is Trump actually the president, there is a lot in the beginning and end of this movie that sets up Vladimir Putin and Russia as our chief antagonists. And they're like, if in Hillary's America, America's enemies will be in power. And then there's like a, you know, like a sort of a shot of Vladimir Putin stepping off a, you know, a plane or something like that.
And he also made the error of assuming that racism would still be an antagonist right now.
Right.
We talked about how, you know, the first part of the movie is the Democrat, like him showing the Democrats and, you know, the him going, and then they said, more racism, please. But then you think about like the Trump people that he's marketing this movie to. He's like, he has to take time to explain, like, no, that's bad. Slavery is actually bad because it's like socialism.
Yeah, there's a speech where they have Ben Tillman, who is a post-Reconstruction Democratic senator, talking about the need for them to be a white party. And you just wonder, what are they getting out of this? Are they like, maybe these Democrats have something going for them?
Yeah, I'm sure most of these guys would think Charles Sumner was a big pussy.
And then like as a documentary filmmaker and as really like the star of the movie, like his main trick in this movie is adopting this kind of fake wide-eyed naivety about everything. And he presents himself as like a scholar who's nonetheless completely ignorant about basic facts about American history. But the thing is, that's what he thinks of his audience.
The Democrats support slavery.
He gives this kind of gives facts about American history that like this is the secret history of the Democratic Party that is also covered in middle school American history. And like, you know, like that is the contempt he has for his audience, is that like he pretends to be as ignorant of these very basic facts as he assumes the audience is, but which makes for a funny comedic juxtaposition because he has to take pains over and over again to say, no, the Democrats were for slavery, which is bad.
It took it too far. Every time that he stumbles on one of these, because he's a shitty actor too, he just makes this face like, you know, his dog just farted. What?
That's the best part of the movie is like him bumbling around the world and he makes it into like the Hillary campaign quarters. But the conceit is that they have this secret room where they're like, do not let Dinesh in here. Right. This has all the files proving we're racist.
I don't know why
we didn't burn them and keep them in one room behind an unlocked door that
Dinesh could just walk into. It really is just like a very shitty National Treasure sequel.
He literally found Andrew Jackson's bloody slave whip down in the DNC basement.
People find out that Andrew Jackson had slaves. This whole thing's going down.
And like the other main trick, his main trick is a narrator, like I said, is this fake naivete about everything where he's like discovering, did you know Andrew Jackson was responsible for American Indian genocide? What?
Imagine it's white genocide, audience.
But the main tool of like the movie itself, or the argument that the movie's advancing, is this idea that the Republican and Democratic parties have not changed at all over the 180 years that the film covers.
Not only their ideology, but the actual people. Same human beings who are 300 years old now.
Look, everyone in Congress is a Highlander. I thought we knew that. This is established fact.
So there are these sort of four parts of the movie, and the movie begins with the fact that he's like, his Obama documentary was so successful that he was sent to jail.
It definitely kept him from getting reelected.
Which was the intended purpose of it.
Secret tapes of Obama being like, I order you to double the deficit and imprison Dinesh for telling the truth.
My judgment.
Dinesh D'Souza was sentenced on Tuesday to spend 8 months in a confinement center.
It all began when the Obama administration tried to shut me up.
So, it begins with a reenactment of his trial where he was indicted for violating campaign finance laws the story is he used straw donors, two of which was his girlfriend and her then husband, to bypass the limit of money that you're allowed to give to his friend Wendy Long.
It's the first cuck campaign violation.
It's like Moneyball, cuckball.
So the first quarter of this movie or so, it begins with the reenactment of his judge being like, for the crime of believing in the Constitution, we are sentencing you to therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. Dinesh starts saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and he's like, throw that man in contempt.
So Dinesh's like poor me version reenactment of the judge is exactly how Carl Digler feels about his family court judge. To say, you are going to prison, you will never see your son again.
So like going from that reenactment, he does a reenactment of his actual incarceration, which we should be clear, took place evenings and nights at a halfway house an hour from his home in San Diego.
But when he gets in the halfway house, it first of all looks like a CIA black site prison.
Or the Chicago Police Department, right?
Yeah. And every criminal in there is like, hey, I'm in here because I murdered 20 people for my gang.
Right.
By the way, Republicans are racist.
Yeah.
And it sets up what Dinesh is going to do.
Well, when Hillary, they're watching the TV and Hillary announces... And they're all huddled around the TV, she announces, and they literally cheer. Like, all the gangbangers, like, that's our girl!
I can't wait to vote for her four times!
I'm with her!
Yo, it's a woman's time!
She's battle-tested, motherfucker!
So, like, this is the Oz part of the movie.
Yeah, just like, very much so.
Dinesh, we're putting you in Emerald City, away from Gen Pop. It's our experimental unit for political prisoners.
Adebisi is in there. Simone Adebisi, you have a call with David Brock.
Another detail I noticed when he was in prison, he's like, I just have to focus on my books. And in prison, he's reading a book that's just called The Democratic Party. But
it's sort of like Music Band on Steve Buscemi's.
So Dinesh, like, he's like, I'm going to make the most of my time in prison, which is learning about the Democratic Party, but also learning the power of street knowledge, as Public Enemy once said. And he gets hip to crime and gang from, let's be honest, the other white collar criminals he was probably in jail with.
That's the thing. Like, he has a little talk with the guard beforehand, and he's like, "Yeah, the people in here are mostly for white collar stuff." But then they kind of imply, like, "Well, yeah, but there are people here who can't leave, and they're really scary." And like, if I had just gotten that, the implication is, if he had just gotten a little more of a bad sentence, he could have gotten like in a real scary place. But it's like, so you're saying that Obama didn't give you the really scary punishment that he could have, but he's also a horrifying dictator. He's just making you stay overnight at this place with a bunch of nerds.
We had this storyline we wanted to do with Digler once, where he gets thrown into father's jail, which is a special prison they put guys who get thrown in contempt in family court in. And it was basically this.
I actually found there was a Vanity Fair profile of Dinesh D'Souza about his life after conviction. And it talks about how he eats dinner every night at the Subway sandwich shop right outside the halfway house, because he like never wants to be late, because he figures if he shows up a minute late, Obama's going to throw the book at him. So he shows up at 8 o'clock every night, and this is what Dinesh said in the article. I'll be on my bed. I'll hear four guys discussing the tits on a woman at Los Tacos. It will go on and on and on. I'm just powerless to move. So there are all these scenes of him, like, you know, on his bunk bed. And,
but wait
like,
a minute. They showed him, like, an exercise yards and eating in a chow, like a cafeteria.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he actually did any of that.
The depiction of his time in prison is astoundingly fraudulent, even if you don't know the details of it. Because, okay, so he's in a halfway house and he has to check in at 8 o'clock every night. Then he creates, I think, a composite character in the figure of Rock.
Let's talk about
that guy Rock, who's a gang leader who, like I said, gives Dinesh street knowledge. It's sort of like how Malcolm X converted to Islam in prison. Dinesh converts to crime in prison, and Rock is like, yo, my man Dinesh, this is how it goes, yo. And then Rock proceeds to lay out for him. He was like, it worked like this. I was in a gang that sold people fraudulent life insurance claims.
Big thing amongst the Bloods, Crips. Yeah. Yeah. Latin Kings, number one source of income.
So he sold sort of elderly people posing as community leaders and organizers, sold them fraudulent life insurance claims, and then murdered them.
They literally went to their apartment and just fucking whacked them.
Yeah.
There's in one of the reenactments, they show a guy in a wheelchair getting stabbed in the neck, like just getting shanked like 30 times in the neck. And he's like, and if a witness wanted to say something about it, we took care of that too. And then it just like pop in a car.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, as long as I get here by 8 o'clock every night, things are pretty much okay.
Yeah. Right.
And,
And he won the respect of Rock and all the badass cons by playing chess. Remember?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
there's a scene
that
where
made
like,
him Huggy Bear.
Like, yeah, Rock's like, "Yo, you good at chess, my man?" And he's like, "Actually,
why,
I am.
Yes, I'm rather good."
Rock played by Michael Rapaport.
Yeah. Rock is played breakout character Rock, played by Michael Rapaport. First scene. Hey, Duke.
Obama's whole style is chump.
Prison is all about discovering your hidden talents and impressing everyone, such as with your chess ability.
I didn't have time to get back to the halfway house before Subway closed, but they're catering subs. Everything's coming up Dinesh.
Dinesh learns about how crime works in jail.
What did I learn?
All crime is about stealing.
And then a light goes off in his head where he's like, what if the way criminals act are the way the bigger criminals act, i.e. the Democratic Party? And as you said, Bill, there's scenes where they're in the rec room in jail and they're watching CNN and Hillary's just like, I want to be your president. And then, like, you know, the leader of the Black Gorilla Fam is like,
Pantsuit Nation, bitch.
Everyone from MS-13, the Mexican Mafia, Aryan Brotherhood, the Bloods.
But like, also like, when he talks to Rock, Rock is like, the real criminals, those are the Republicans. They're straight up racist, yo. Yeah. Dinesh is just like, if only I could reach out and teach my brother Rock the true history of the Democratic Party.
Rock, who just admitted to killing like 80 elderly people.
Which sort of, and that gets into like the second, and I think like basically the first half of this movie is all about slavery.
It's bad, folks.
Which is, you know,
well, I don't.
Which Dinesh handles in a very tasteful way in many reenactments. But like, so once he gets out of jail, then it gets into this secret history of the Democratic Party, which begins by Dinesh going to a building that says Democratic Party, just like the book. Right. And he walks in, and like the Democratic Party headquarters is basically a museum of the history of the Democratic Party that has like video displays of Debbie Wasserman Schultz like saying like, we're going to empower young people and do social justice.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a flag with 57 stars on it.
And then in a motif that's repeated again and again in this movie, Dinesh goes to the Democrat Museum, but then goes off tour, goes under like the caution tape into an area marked top secret, employees only.
Please don't go in here. The lock's broken.
Right. Yeah. Incriminating file room. Do not enter.
He finds the secret room in Democratic Party headquarters with the big box of files marked racism. And he
to be fair, we do have a box like that in our office.
And he begins to investigate the secret history of the Democratic Party. Now, before we get into Dinesh's version of American history, I think it's worth going back into the recovered history, the secret history of Dinesh D'Souza himself.
So does this mean that you went to the Dinesh D'Souza headquarters and went into the room that was marked no access?
No, just like some recent vintage Dinesh has, you know, on social media, has called Obama a grown-up Trayvon Martin. Posted a photo of Obama taking a selfie with the headline, "You can take the boy out of the ghetto, but you can't take the ghetto out of the boy."
Jeez, what a piece of shit.
He also he had an image macro of Obama, and it was like, "Here's my position on beheading. I be heading to the golf course."
Yo, we do be like that though.
Wow,
dead ass. We're Obama though.
Basically, a third of this movie is Dinesh saying how horrible the racist history of the Democratic Party is and that the Republicans are the real party of social justice and racial equality. And funny, when I was looking up reviews of this movie or like the Dinesh's sort of second career as a documentary filmmaker, I was stunned by like how many media outlets like The Atlantic and like The New Republic that were writing articles along the lines of what happened to Dinesh D'Souza?
Hmm.
But it's just like he was always this fucking person. He was always a piece of shit.
For his entire career. Like he outed gay students at Dartmouth.
Dinesh, he was like a college Republican at Dartmouth who...
Those are like ultra college Republicans.
Yeah, that's like
in the parlance of the Devil's Playground, they would be the Shia of college Republicans.
The most ferocious.
Classmate of Laura Ingraham too, right?
Yeah, yes. They dated, I believe.
Oh my god.
But yeah, he was editor of the Dartmouth Review, which was this sort of conservative journal, and which he authored a satire of affirmative action called, quote, "This show ain't no jive, bro." that it was from the perspective of a recently matriculated student, a black student coming to Dartmouth, who says things like, "Now we be coming to Dartmouth and be up and over frozen studies, but we still not be graduating Phi Beta Kappa."
Oh, that's stunning.
So, Jesus.
He also, under his editorship, the paper published a lighthearted interview with a former member of the KKK, which was accompanied
Those
by...
Those guys are such goofs, man.
Which was accompanied by a staged photo of a black man hanging from a tree. And he also attended meetings of a gay student group and took down their names and outed them in the paper, several of which were still closeted to their parents. I mean, an absolute scumbag.
Look, not all his articles were bad. What about Operation Paperclip, 40 years of laughs?
After Dartmouth, he was in the Reagan administration and sort of like a standard conservative policy wonk, but he sort of broke out with publishing a book about called Illiberal Education that did very well and was reviewed very well, that was sort of an attack on PC culture in the early 90s. He then sort of squandered that by writing a book called The End of Racism, in which he argued that, quote, the old forms of discriminations have declined and instead been replaced by what he calls rational discrimination based on accurate group generalizations. He uses words like parasitic to describe the relationship between black people and the government. Mm. And also, among his assertions, this is in the book, he says, slavery in this country was not actually based on race, and that if we're going to discuss America owing black people reparations for slavery, then what do blacks owe America for the abolition of slavery? He also in this book riffed on the widely different personalities developed during slavery, including the playful Sambo, the sullen field hard N, I'm not going to say it, the sullen field hard N, fill that in your head, hard R, sorry, the dependable mammy, the sly and inscrutable trickster, all of which he claimed were still recognizable in present-day African-American culture.
He never managed to use the word mandingo in there.
I'm sure he did. I didn't read the whole book. So these are Dinesh's like actual attitudes about black people and black culture,
yeah.
Which is funny. Yeah, and then he gets, which is, of course, juxtaposed with how he presents his wide-eyed belief in how bad and awful black people were treated by the Democratic Party in this country, which begins with his portrayal of Andrew Jackson, who was a slaver, an Indian killer, and a raper. He made a special account to show him inviting a slave into his bedroom, and then I think he uses the line, "What is it with Democratic politicians and vulnerable young women?"
I did enjoy the performance of the guy who was playing Andrew Jackson, because he was basically like a racist Benny Hill. he would look at the slaves and then they'd be like, boing, 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 boing. Like his eyebrows would start waggling.
That's a nice.
The movie is filled with these historical reenactments and like a lot of it, which takes place on the floor of Congress, and like their set for that, I think, was just like the lunchroom at a country club.
Yeah, yeah. And they use a bunch of community theater actors there. It's like, yeah. They had no wig budget at all.
Oh my God. Like, John C. Calhoun's wig was a fucking crime.
Looks like an anime.
Yeah. It's like someone took a fucking mop and cut the top off and slapped it on his head.
I have a theory about the actors. You know how we have a theory that Matt presented a theory that everyone who unironically bought this movie got suckered into a reverse mortgage 3 times in the last year. One of the conditions of a reverse mortgage is that you're an indentured servitude to D'Souza Media.
You get like drafted to be in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shut up. You're playing John C. Calhoun.
D'Souza learned that con, by the way, from that guy in prison.
Yeah. From Rock.
And damn,
then he
it,
killed
Rock.
All of them.
Well, yeah. We
by the way, the only Rock I've ever heard of in the context of African American culture is the classic Charles S. Dutton sitcom,
yes,
from the 90s. I never heard of that.
Who was an actual murderer.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, and a wonderful actor and everything, but yeah. he killed a guy.
He did. That's true.
Yeah, we also joked that at the premiere of this movie, our Rock's gang was giving life insurance policies to everyone who came to see the movie.
They wouldn't even have to kill him. Just a little bit of patience is
little,
all that was
little
required.
Hypertension a week later.
So much of this movie, the historical part, is done in these incredibly lame reenactments, which crosses over from corny to like actually nauseating when he uses African-American actors to play slaves, and he lingers on their lynching and whippings at the hands of vile, evil Democratic politicians over and over again. And perhaps most like actually the most revolting thing in this movie is when he uses the radical Republican journalist Ida B. Wells as a stand-in for himself. He was like, Ida B. Wells is the Dinesh D'Souza of her era because she was standing up to the Democratic Party and lynchings. And I just, we were wondering watching this movie, what did the actress who was cast in the part of Ida B. Wells think she was participating
in? When she finally saw it, she's like, I thought this was an episode of Drunk History.
Drunk on Truth, maybe.
So we get like this history of the Democratic Party that pretends that, that you're learning for the first time that the Democratic Party was the party of slavery and white supremacy in the 19th century and early 20th century. There's of course, they were the party of the Ku Klux Klan and Nathan Bedford Forrest, and who they assassinated Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president.
Can we talk about the Lincoln part for a second?
Yeah, Virgil. Talk about Lincoln and the Ku Klux Klan part of the movie.
So they had, like, as bad as the Calhoun costume was, they had, like, the worst fucking birthday party rent a Lincoln there. There was no continuity. I don't know if you noticed this, but in one scene he has a beard, and another scene he doesn't. And he's just a clean-shaven Lincoln with these long sideburns that are neatly trimmed, just like some asshole you'd see walking around Bedford Avenue.
No, yeah, he was, in the first scene, he had no beard at all. And it was Lincoln's second inaugural that he was saying, which means he definitely would have had a beard. And then another one, he had a beard that didn't connect to his sideburns. Yeah. And then the third one, he had the full
beard.
So
all up to this point, just awful hair, awful costumes, awful props that are like done by the same guys who did props for Repo Man. And then then there's this dramatic scene about the assassination of a Reconstruction Republican,
yeah,
by the Klan. And you see these Klan guys ride in. And these Klan robes they're wearing are the most accurate, detailed costumes the whole movie. Like, they put extra work into them. Maybe they just had them.
Yeah, everything else in the movie, it's like slaves wearing FUBU and like fucking Abraham Lincoln has a soul patch. But with the Klan, and Dinesh is like, yeah, whatever. But when
top hat's a Kangol hat.
When the KKK came in, he's like, no, that rank is all wrong.
They had ranks and everything.
Yeah.
Grand Wizard. Like,
they even had the red Grand Wizard's robe. They had all the correct like insignias and everything. We had the idea of like stealing Klan valor.
Yeah.
Who is your Imperial Dragon, sir? You know that people got fired from the gas station wearing that outfit?
So for some reason, as we've noticed, the Ku Klux Klan outfits in this movie were incredibly good. Shiny. These were not bed sheets. These were like shiny, just gleaming robes.
One call to Jeff Sessions is all it takes. Like, hook me up, would you, Jeff?
Oh, I can look into my summer stock closet.
So then it gets to this thing where Dinesh has to account for like the switch in party allegiance in the 20th century, or like he's saying that like Democrats always talk about the civil rights movement in the 60s, but they neglect the more important civil rights movement, which was Reconstruction and abolitionism, which took place in the 19th century and the Civil War, and that was when, you know, Lincoln and the Republicans are the part, and Frederick Douglass is a Republican, blah blah blah. And then he gets into this idea that like there's this big switch in party identification post civil rights movement, where the Republican, that what was formerly the racist Democratic South, became the racist Republican South.
Can I just talk about one moment where Woodrow Wilson is watching Birth of a Nation in the White House? And the Klansman on the horse literally comes out of the screen, and he basically comes in his pants, like, yeah, like, and then chases him out onto the lawn.
Woodrow Wilson was like, you know those like fucked up teens that watched Avatar and wanted to kill themselves because they wanted to live in the blue world? Right. That was Woodrow Wilson.
Right.
He's like, what a beautiful experience.
It was basically the last action hero with the Klan.
But again, it shows how this works, because like, again, there's always like a kernel of real history here. Woodrow Wilson was a deeply racist president.
Yeah.
And he's referring to the time when they screened D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation at the White House, and Woodrow Wilson's famous quote about it was, it was like history written in lightning. But of course, in Dinesh's like literal mind, he shows like the Klan lightning like creates it and rides out, and Woodrow Wilson literally chases this ghostly apparition onto the White House lawn and is like, Shane, come back!
Woodrow Wilson, and also a big figure of inspiration for neoconservatives' foreign policy ambitions. But, you know, God forbid Dinesh bring that up.
Don't get off the narrative, man.
No, the scene with Birth of a Nation was incredible. And again, it's funny because the image of newly freed slaves that D.W. Griffith portrays in Birth of a Nation is exactly the portrayal of contemporary African-American culture that Dinesh D'Souza parodied at both the Dartmouth Review and in his book, The End of Racism. Exactly. They hold the exact same view of just like a pathological, just sort of almost childlike culture. So like then he gets to this thing where he uses logic to prove that the modern Republican Party is in no way tainted by the racism of the Democrats of the past. And what he does, there's an amazing line in it where he says, "It's quite simple, really. As the South got less racist, it got more Republican." Which is I think we watched this with Nick, and Nick said that like it's sort of like saying as AIDS ravishes your body's immune system, you're actually getting healthier. Yeah. The other thing he does, he brings up the example of Strom Thurmond, right, as the example of racist Ku Klux Klan Democrat who became an arch conservative Republican, and he's like, let's look at this in context. How many Strom Thurmonds really? There was Strom Thurmond, but how many really switched allegiance? And what he does is he creates a graphic of blue and red, and he adds up all of the Democratic politicians since the party existed.
Yes,
since Andrew Jackson.
Since Andrew Jackson.
And counting as switching to counts Whigs as Republicans.
Yep.
Even though they weren't really, they were their own thing.
He takes every Democratic politician from the time when there literally wasn't a Republican Party, and then adds them up, and there's like four that switched. But and then it all brushes away, and then all the it just spells out lie. He was like, the big switch is a big lie, and then it just says lie in case you were confused at all. From there, he moves from the Democratic Party's history of slavery. He moves on into their history with crime and the progressive era. And through that, he comes to the character of Saul Alinsky.
God, this is so good.
He gives a history of Saul Alinsky, the radical community organizer.
Who apparently was an intern for Al Capone.
Yeah.
He was getting college credit for finding out how the mafia worked in Chicago.
As Dinesh portrays
Frank Nitti's like buddy.
Yeah. As Dinesh portrays it in this movie, he basically interned with Frank Nitti and taught them how to do better crime because he was in fact more ruthless than they were.
Frank Nitti's like, you're a heartless scumbag, man.
Ooh, Mr. Capone, have you thought about blaming racism for market forces?
And when I was watching the Frank Nitti reenactments, I was like, God, he should have gotten Billy Drago to do Frank Nitti again. Yeah. That would have been so good.
Lipless motherfucker.
He's like, your friend, he died screaming like a stuck Irish pig.
No, he was talking about the estate tax. Your friend, he died screaming like Ambassador Stevens.
Billy Drago would have done it, too.
Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
He would have done this movie, for sure. And the other part of the Saul Alinsky section that I really loved was when it showed like Saul Alinsky got like the light first went off in his head about his life of crime. He was at a lunch counter where you would pay with a ticket.
Yeah.
It was like the old style deli.
An automat
where you'd pay with a ticket like after getting your food. And he devised an ingenious scheme to pretend that he had lost a ticket, pay for a coffee when he had really had a sandwich, then take the ticket to a different automat.
They use the same ticket system.
Yeah.
And they have to be the exact same ones.
And
he started off as a meatloaf stealer, son of a bitch.
And then he organized the whole gang of community organizers, if you will, to branch out over Chicago and rip off automats
everywhere. Mashed potatoes and shit.
I mean, like what you said, Felix, I can't say it, but what you said is that,
I'll say it. I don't want you to get in trouble for this.
Thanks. Thanks, man. That's why we work well
together.
You're
the lightning rod, aren't you?
Dinesh, skips the step where he's supposed to explain how Alinsky invented, modern liberal big Chicago crime politics. And it just, and Alinsky was a cheap Jew. That's the entire thing about why Alinsky's bad is it's just Alinsky going to restaurants and being like, how is it stealing if they have the nerve to charge a quarter for a sandwich?
That's the message.
Such bad food and so little of it.
That's the message I got from the Capone scene. It's that it's not that Saul Alinsky was this brutal guy. He was just looking through their fucking accounting books going, you could save more money actually if you cut these assassins.
I've got a lot of overhead here. I think
You just saved us 50, Randy.
So from there, he goes like into the progressive era of Democrats. And then there's this whole thread about Democrats and eugenics. And they bring on National Review columnist and author Jonah Goldberg. He interviews Jonah Goldberg in this movie.
The guy's got a magnifying screen presence.
Yeah, yeah.
He literally chews the scenery.
I mean, you could...
The opening video of the Democratic Convention in 2012, government is the one thing we all belong to. Because no, government belongs to us. We don't belong to it.
What are these Democrats hiding?
I mean, you know that that is why Dinesh had him on, so that he would comparatively look masculine and have, like, yeah, you know, charismatic.
He's a black hole of charisma. Yeah.
The only I went home after we saw this last night and tried to, like, jot down notes, and the only note I have for Jonah Goldberg is, what a fucking cumwad.
Yeah, they actually have to get, they actually have to find a special restaurant to shoot with Jonah that would allow him to breastfeed during the conversation.
Goldberg has this, like, grouper-like mouth that's framed by the world's worst goatee. And it,
I don't know. Steven Seagal is still alive.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But you know what? Goldberg's mouth, when he talks, it reminds me of the Terry Gilliam animation in Monty Python, where it's just like it's just like it's just a joint, yeah, of like the face is just split and just talks like a hinged
or a South Park Canadian.
Yeah, the South Park Canadian thing. So Jonah Goldberg comes on to make his case that, you know, progressivism is fascism, which is communism, and he's like, the New Republic, the flagship magazine of liberalism in the 1920s, wrote glowingly about Benito Mussolini and fascism. And it's like, yeah, Jonah, the National Review, the flagship magazine of conservatism, wrote very glowing things quite closer to present day than the New Republic did in the
20s. Let's check out their Augusto Pinochet obit from like 5 years ago.
And like, again, this cuts against like his whole thesis.
Genie, you're free.
Pinochet taught me it was okay to be different at dark.
So they have the Joan ad come on to talk about how you know Democrats are the real racists, but like the National Review, which was the post-civil rights flagship conservative magazine, was explicitly founded against the civil rights movement, right? That was Buckley's famous quote about standing athwart history. He was talking about Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement at the time. Would seem to cut against Dinesh's thesis. Then Goldberg tells some story that he's like, everybody should know the story of Becky Crud, the woman who... Everybody should know about Miss Crud. She was forcibly... she was deemed a mental half-wit and sterilized against her will. And then it gets into this whole Margaret Sanger thing about how progressivism is eugenics, blah, blah, blah. But Jonah Goldberg, again, without any self-awareness, is sort of like... Oh, he's like, sterilization is no joke. Can you imagine a woman being held down, medically violated, and forced to have a serious medical procedure against her will?
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
That'd be terrible.
Yeah, that would be terrible, Jonah. I agree.
Yeah, he's a dullard. Holy shit.
And then there's just all this whole thing where, like, the crime model, right, is that Democrats want to give rights to immigrants and black people specifically, not because they think it would be good for them, but because they want their votes, right? And it becomes part of this machine
crime.
Which is crime.
Like literally politics. Yes. Yeah. It's like, oh, they force these guys to vote for them by giving them policies that they would prefer to the other party.
Yeah. They just one quick thing, back to Margaret Sanger. They actually, yeah, he dug up a Hillary at a Planned Parenthood,
right,
event,
yes,
and saying, Margaret Sanger, you know, basically saying Hillary is pro-eugenic.
She makes the most delicious fetuses.
I wasn't going to be the type of first lady that was stuck in the kitchen baking fetuses. So on the one hand, he's saying the Democrats are the party of eugenics. And again, this is all based in, this is real history. Much of the progressive movement was shot through with this weird, the eugenic movement. And there were fascist elements to Woodrow Wilson and a lot of the progressive era. But it's this thing where, like, he's like, okay, the Democrats believe in sort of racial hygienics and they want to stop the prevent the propagation of non-white races through birth control and abortion and things like that. But they also want to propagate those races so that they will vote for them and win every election.
Yeah, he like trips over his dick within a minute of his, like, from one thesis, yeah, to
we got
to
wipe out
kill
these
them all
people,
but get their votes.
Yeah.
later.
Well, you let them vote when they're dead. See, he should have done more with Daly.
Ooh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, just get the birth certificates.
And Saul Alinsky, you'll get their houses. Sell them. Just to close out the Saul Alinsky thing, he like has some just throwaway line where he's like, Saul Alinsky, who dropped dead in California. Like, he didn't say, like, it's weird. He just sort of like implies that there's something nefarious about him dropping dead rather than just he died in the 70s because he was an old man.
I imagine that, like, the implication is that God struck him down for his insolence and criminality or something.
Virgil, I like your comment about...
Which comment?
He dropped that he starved to death because they stopped making the ticket automat restaurants. So he goes to the progressive area. By the time he gets to the civil rights movement of the 20th century, he can't even really be bothered to do the old conservative thing to like argue that Martin Luther King was actually a conservative because he wanted people to be judged by their character and not race. He just sort of says that he says at one point, all the civil rights movement did was, you know, recognize the constitutional rights that Republicans had already created. But like, he doesn't mention like the actual political struggle involved in that, or the fact that Lyndon Johnson was the guy who made it happen and was a Democrat. And again, he brings up the fact that Lyndon Johnson was personally racist, which is true, but like, it's in service of this completely fraudulent view of history and the civil rights movement.
Well, they have an actor playing Johnson going, we need their votes. Like, yeah, kind of, it's sort of basic politics 101, right?
There was this, God, there's the one part where he's on Air Force One and Johnson just like lets the N-word slip. And there's a black steward behind him, and like Johnson doesn't know, and you cut to that guy and he's
ruefully
just
shaking his head.
I'm surprised they didn't go with the American Indian pollution single tear rolling down his cheek.
I wish they had shown Johnson on the can, though. That really would have been the coup de grace.
I wish they'd shown his legendary penis.
Yeah. There's a scene where a Republican goes, I think black people should vote for us because of moral duty, not because we give them things. And Johnson just takes his dick out. Like, this is the plantation.
He unfurls his hog and it's got whites only written on it.
Johnson's cock is actually next to Jackson's whip in the DMC.
Cut to Milton Berle going, holy shit.
I thought I was packing, ma.
So he gets to Obama, and then he loves using audio clips from Obama's book Dreams of My Father, where Obama is in his own voice reading the book and describes being in a black barber shop where they complain about Democratic politicians being like a plantation. But then he describes a scene from Obama's childhood where he tells people, he tells the kids in his mostly white school that his dad is like a prince in Africa. And like, then there's a parents' day, you know, like where your parents would come and tell everyone what they do for a living. And in the reenactment, Obama's dad comes to class with a spear
and a leopard hat
and shakes it at the students. And it's like the scene in CB4 where it's like, I'm black. I'm biggity, biggity black.
Dude, the dad literally goes, the first thing the dad says while you're in class holding a spear and a leopard hat is, I am from Africa.
And the teacher says, now, Barack, I hope your dad brought enough dog for the whole class.
And then like the hook to this scene, like the reason that the elder Obama is bad is because he like spellbinds the class by talking about like, you know, I mean, like the way that Dinesh directed the scene, he might as well have like boiled the teacher in a pot. But like, you know, of course, the dad is like, in the actual book, like the dad is charismatic and spellbinding, and Obama's like, wow, I was so amazed by how he could keep everyone's attention. But Dinesh starts playing like the horrible dramatic music. And the implied thing here is that it's like, it's bad if people like you. You know, like they would cut back to him and Jonah at the restaurant, and he's like, everyone in the restaurant spit on me and Jonah, which is how you know that we're moral. We're not like the Obamas. Everyone hates the shit out of us.
Even in his twisted logic there, I lost the thread in the dad scene. Like I didn't get
what
his point seemed to be that he was embarrassed when his dad was going to show up. He was like, oh, brother, dad, what are you going to do?
Oh, no, I told them all my dad was African, but he's actually Saul Alinsky.
So what I do every day at work is that I give them the wrong ticket, and I have saved approximately
30%. I eat a lot of chicken a la King Free.
I am an African.
But then the dad is really charismatic, and you can see young baby Obama's growing pride, and it seems to imply that Dad taught me how to communicate and to bullshit people. Or so, I mean, that's the best I could grab from
but
it.
But the dad doesn't even bullshit people. People just like him because he's a compelling speaker. But Dinesh is like, this is where his empire of lies.
All right. I can imagine, though, seeing that scene is, did his dad bring that spear on the airplane from Africa to Hawaii? Like, did he check it? Did he bring it on? Did they let him put it into the closet?
It was
in the pre 9/11.
You could bring a broadsword.
Might have been a collapsible. But that is the lesson that Obama that being a good father who plays along for your son's benefit is bad. And being this unliked gnome person who's racist.
Yeah, it's like
that's
personal,
good, actually.
Yeah, any kind of like, any kind of personality, positive personal traits that make you amenable to other people and make them like you is basically cheating.
That's cheating.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like you're only like a truly virtuous person if you're able to have influence in society through the sheer force of your ideas because you personally are a repellent piece of shit. It's the Ted Cruz thesis.
Yeah.
We must make the most of our moment to fight for freedom, to protect our God-given rights, even of those with whom we don't agree, so that when we are old and gray...
There's booing going on here.
And when our work is...
And it's like, I feel like this... part like Dinesh with Obama specifically, Dinesh shows his ass the most because, like, if you his last movie, which is about Obama and how Obama was purposely going to destroy America because his dad was like an anti-colonialist. But then you start looking at the two men, okay, both children of immigrants who went to elite schools and were sort of like fast tracked as young wunderkin in their respective political slots. And you have Obama, who just, like, you know, success after success, like, just enraptured people whenever you got him, gave him a chance to speak in front of people. You know, no matter what you think of the guy's policies, we've obviously criticized a lot, but just, you know, an icon to tens of millions of people, beloved. You have Dinesh, who's just, like, had similar beginnings, but is now known for, like, as... Virgil pointed out, cuck campaign law breaking right. And like writing books that are like, yo, honky, I ain't pulling up my pants, right. That everyone hates.
So Obama is bad because, you know, he was endorsed and carried through his career by the literal personal endorsement of millions of people who took the action of voting for him. Meanwhile, Dinesh D'Souza is able to put a roof over his head because like 5 billionaire goblins have underwritten his career his entire life, and no actual citizen has ever given a scintilla of a fuck about anything he's ever had to say.
Well, I mean, the Obama documentary was quite successful.
Oh, it's like all that bullshit. The books too. Come on, but like they're fucking buying out theaters and like wheeling in old people to watch.
Well, actually, here's the line from his book, and I don't know if this is in the documentary, but this is in his book, 2016, Obama's America. This is his line about think about this in the scene where Obama's father literally shakes a spear at his classmates. He said, Dinesh writes, "The most powerful country in the world is being governed according to the dreams of a Luau tribesman of the 1950s, a polygamist who abandoned his wives, drank himself into a stupor, and bounced around on two iron legs." I don't know what that means.
What?
Raging?
He's
a cyborg.
Wait a minute. RoboCop is Obama's dad?
Obama's dad built a Gundam to repel the British Empire.
He says, raging against the world for denying him the realization of his anti-colonial ambitions. This philandering, inebriated African socialist is now setting the nation's agenda through the reincarnation of his dreams in his son. He does Obama for a little bit, but like in the movie called Hillary's America, he saves it till about the last quarter of the movie to be about Hillary. And I found
Not even, dude. 10 minutes.
It's about 10 minutes of the movie for him to actually get to his thesis on Hillary Clinton, which is basically that she steals things. But here's what I found interesting about watching this movie. Let's say the first like three quarters of the movie so far has been among the most laughably incompetent abortion of American history that's basically ever been presented.
No one on earth could be persuaded by a single thing that he has said in that film. Unless they are like just
brain dead,
they're just a brain stem that
ambulates.
Or like everyone who did see this movie, they went in there to agree with it.
I mean, like the only people who like would have gotten their minds changed by that movie, they'd be like, "Well, Dinesh, I wish I could vote in this election, but I accidentally sold myself into servitude in China by participating in a contest in the back of a Cracker Jack box. But, you really sold me.
hold on. This guy is telling me I can have an ownership stake in the Brooklyn Bridge.
The change in direction when it gets to not just Hillary Clinton, but both of the Clintons and their various dealings is actually really instructive, because it's the only effective part of the movie. And the thing we were watching, like thinking about, why he's talking about all of the nasty shit they did in Haiti through the Clinton Foundation, and just basically their public record. Like, if he had chosen to do a 90-minute documentary that was about the conduct of the Clinton Foundation, he could have had an effective piece of agitprop from a right-wing perspective. And the thing that's incredible is that his presentation of the Clintons actually lands, because they are actually so fucking sleazy and crooked that even an absolute dull shithead like Dinesh D'Souza is capable of putting together a package
blind
on them.
Blind squirrel finding a nut.
Yeah, because like we talked about in his Obama movie, he doesn't land a glove once.
No, because his thesis is insane. Like his it's like a theory of genetic ideology. Like, he passed radical anti-colonialism through his sperm.
Yeah, it's a Lovecraft conservative thesis.
Well, he does, you know, it is only like the last quarter or even fifth of the movie, but he does set the table early on in the scene with Rock, with his boy Rock, where he, what if the Democratic Party is stealing America? But he circles back to that when he gets to the Clinton, and that's how I think he imagined it lands.
So, Bill, that's what I hated so much about this fucking movie, is that Dinesh makes up this concept of a con. This is what he thinks a con is in his head, the thing that he puts in the character of Rock to tell him. And that con makes no sense. That's not how a fucking con works. It's like a part of it is they pose as insurance guys, and they give $5,000 checks to people, right, and then a few months later murder them and get more money back. It's asinine.
Overhead on that fucking idea is insane. Like, they had little laminated brochures to give everybody. Yeah. They were wearing suits. They had a sales force.
It's like if Christopher Molisanti got hit in the head with a brick and decided to run something.
That's just too stupid to just explain what a Ponzi scheme is or something like that. Familiar, or just look up any con. Yeah. But he invents this to use as a recurring metaphor for the Democratic Party, and it doesn't map
Wait, I think I can interpret it through his broken brain.
Okay.
Okay, you remember the part where he gives them like $5,000 up front, which, by the way, would have run them about $500,000 to
Yo,
do.
We just got
to
get a small business loan, and then we start murdering old people.
Well, that's okay.
No one will connect the dots.
So the free money is like welfare and Social Security and Medicare, but murdering them is the death penalty.
Well, another thing he says in Dinesh's conception of street knowledge is like, when Rock hips him to the game, he's like, if you're going to start a gang, the first thing you need to do is pose as a good guy who's doing has charitable intentions. And I'm like, street gangs all have names like the Bloods and like the Money Murder Posse. Like, posing as good guys is not what they do off the bat.
Dinesh proposes that there are four aspects. He learns from Rock, there are four aspects to every con, and they're just not aspects of a con. The fourth one is deny.
What? Like, as this movie closes out, he's like, Hillary's real plan is to steal America, just like she learned from Saul Alinsky, and like he learned from the Confederacy before him.
It's all one unbroken chain. Hillary, Obama, Saul Alinsky, Al Capone, then the Confederacy.
Nathan Bedford Forrest. Yeah, that's how it works.
It's a very complex organizational chart. I actually wrote down the con formula. This is how the Democrats steal America.
Okay, good.
One, you plan. Two, you pitch. Three, you take. Four, you deny.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the way he thinks the organized crime work is, you go into a restaurant, you order a sandwich, you eat half of it, then you say it wasn't any good, then they give it for you for free, and then you go to another restaurant and eat the other half of the sandwich and say that wasn't any good, then you've eaten one sandwich for free.
Then people ask if you've eaten a sandwich, and you say no.
No, that's
the deny part.
You want me to buy lunch? Yeah, I'm good. I haven't eaten yet.
And then we just do that on a national scale.
Yeah, right.
The old Democrat con of adding the Denny's Twitter account and saying your food was bad and asking for coupons.
It's like, did you know Nathan Bedford Forrest was a Democrat? Did you know that the original Republican Party was anti-Gamergate? So, like, he goes on. He finally gets to Hillary Clinton, and he does bring up Benghazi once, and like he shows Hillary from behind, like watching
Watching it happen.
Watching it. Watching the flag
just
drape.
Licking her chops. Watching, like, ooh, kill more of them.
Watching the flag drape coffins like come out of the C-31 airship and like, you know, being brought back to be buried. And
turns
like,
to the camera and he's like a thumbs up.
and his voiceover is like, now we know why she didn't try to save these four heroes. She didn't know how to make a buck off of them. And again, like how does that conception of crime work?
Yeah. She took out a life insurance policy.
She did.
She should have.
Yeah. She took out life insurance policies.
She was really
policies.
Doing that shit. She would have put life insurance on everyone at the compound, then excite the Muslims, and then get them killed, and then cash the check.
So it's like, again, and it's so funny like how out of date this movie is, even the fact that it was released like 5 months ago. So he gets to the end of this movie, and he's imploring the audience. He's like, I've given you this history lesson. This is Hillary Clinton. It goes all the way back to Andrew Jackson. And she's the exact same person. And I'm imploring you. Can you imagine what would happen if we let people as depraved and corrupt as Bill and Hillary back into the White House? And it's like, well, Dinesh, we don't have to worry about that because they were defeated by someone even more crooked and depraved than they were. Yeah.
Like literally, his stuff about the Clintons and the stuff about Obama ruining the world at the beginning is like, we're letting Russia do anything now. And it's like, imagine showing this to like a younger Trump voter, not like the octogenarians that Dinesh is
pitching to. Yeah. Like the last Lord of the Rings movie. This movie also has about 15 places that it could have ended, but then just painfully kept going on and on. There are not one, but two musical montages to end this movie. And the first time it fades to black when we were watching it and we thought it was going to done and be like the song that the credits roll over, it fades to black. And right as it does, we were watching it with Nick Mullen. He just starts going, did the Clint Eastwood Gran Torino? He goes, in my Gran Torino. And I honestly, I nearly had a heart attack.
Yeah.
So tenderly, your story is. Nothing more.
Well, they bring it to that that piano man who's like a warmed over Mark Russell.
Yeah.
And that's a bookend with the beginning where he leads the ensemble in, you know, as somebody who did song parodies on MST3K, crappy days are here again. Like he went for like, what's the most low hanging fruit rhyme we can grab with like 2 seconds to go and. Yeah, and then
has like an actual pitch to the audience at the end. He's this like he's in a tux and tails, sitting at a grand piano. He's got like slicked back hair, glasses, and he's like, "America, it's up to you."
He's like, "Yeah, he barred from
Spike
Lee. Don't
let these Democrats win again.
Like, do the right thing. Yeah. Turn to camera.
Don't let a person get in the Oval Office who's going to use it for personal enrichment."
And then actually, Matt and I watched. Okay, so then there's a first musical montage. Mm-hmm. Then there's a whole like orchestral "God Bless America" with a little girl singing. And like flags waving and stock footage from and clips from other movies that I assumed he paid for.
It reminded me of the end of Soylent Green. Just like the montage he's watching, just to die to. So beautiful.
That scene was reproduced in several theaters.
Matt, you also said it reminded you of the brainwashing scene from Parallax.
From Parallax View. Yeah. Holy shit. I could definitely see somebody assassinating
a
leader
after then
they
the movie ends. The movie ends, and then they have the credits, and then there's another musical montage where it's. I looked this up. It's the Gatlin Brothers.
It's the Gatlin Brothers.
So like, I think the name of the song is "I'm Gonna Start Saying Something." And it's the Gatlin Brothers music video that's like the theme song to the movie. You guys went out to have a cigarette. Matt and I actually watched the entire credit sequence. There's an Easter egg at the end.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, fucking
that's
A,
what
man.
You get for being slaves to your addiction.
Oh, yeah, the Easter egg is rich.
There's an Easter egg at the end where it cuts back to earlier in the Oz prison section of the movie. It talks about how he did work teaching English as a second language to immigrants.
Which was another tripping over his dick moment because his whole point in that moment was, I was subjected to this really harsh punishment because Obama, you know, had it out for me. But he turns to the camera at that point and says, teaching English to immigrants? They thought that was punishment. It's my kind of thing.
Wait, it's also, he trips over his dick a second time with that because his entire scene with the progressive movement is like, oh yeah, then they brought immigrants into America and gave them things. Yeah. And it's like, wait, but you're like, you're just teaching them English.
But what he teaches them is American values. And at the Easter egg at the end of this movie is him closing out his class, and it's almost like the sort of Mexican immigrants in his class are like the stand-in for the audience or the viewers who took this movie seriously. And he says to his class, how will you know when you're in...
I got it right down at the bottom.
Yeah, here you go. He says, so how will you know when you've become an American? You'll know when you become a Republican.
And then the class cheers.
Yeah.
They cheered because they don't speak English.
The funny thing is that they show him and it's supposed to be his first day and he starts talking, I'm going to tell you about America. And then he does that. There's no establishment that any of these people know what the fuck he's talking about.
I just want to read from the Vanity Fair profile of Dinesh after his life after conviction. He says that his time in the clink has actually, it's led him to soften some of his stances. And he says, he once believed that the quality of the immigrant is directly proportional to the distance they traveled to get here. But now I see that the adults in my class are incredibly industrious, determined, and hardworking, and no less strenuous in their pursuit of the American dream than any other immigrant group. And what I love about this is Dinesh's actual moment of genuine naivete, where he's like, did you know that Mexican immigrants are actually hardworking and not criminals?
Yeah.
Well, it's adorable. I mean, no, it's awful, but it doesn't acknowledge that the reason that he loves the immigrants who are from farther away is that the farther away you had to come to become an immigrant to the United States, the more resources you had to get here.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Lucky immigrants like Prince
Bandar Sultan.
Yeah. Now, Dinesh, as he is strange to point out, did immigrate from Mumbai. His family's from Mumbai, but he was actually from a Catholic family. He was taught by Jesuits in India. But what he neglects to mention is he's from a very high caste family
in India that had
very positive associations with British colonialism, unlike Obama's father, for instance. And yeah, like so, like that sums up his whole worldview about immigrants in a nutshell. He also says at the end of this Vanity Fair thing, likewise, his own divorce has, quote, sobered and humbled me and made me a lot more tentative about things I was sure about. It seems he's no longer convinced that the country's acceptance of divorce led to the destruction of the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was a hell of a moment for him because even other right-wingers were like, what are you
doing? I think if D'Souza's time in a minimum security part-time prison with The Rock, if that made him slightly less racist, then it sounds like Obama's re-education camp worked.
So, yeah, I mean, that's Hillary's America. Thank God we've averted this crisis.
Oh, my God, yeah.
She would have, honestly, like, this movie stopped her from becoming president, probably.
There's no question about it. Yeah. Oh, he's taking credit for it.
Yeah.
There's a sponsored Twitter ad from it saying, like, see the movie that stopped Hillary, that kind of thing.
Imagine Trump watching that movie and he's, like, already forgotten all the things he said about Hillary. And he's like, "What? Why would you say that about such a good person? And second of all, what's so bad about Russia?" And Dinesh would just grovel and recut the movie.
Any closing thoughts on Dinesh D'Souza and Hillary's America?
I can't wait till he does it about Cory Booker.
Booker's America coming next.
So if you want to watch this movie, I highly recommend not paying for it. If you'd like to
do it. Yeah, do a Saul Alinsky there.
Yeah.
Work the scam and then deny it.
Get a movie ticket to one of Michael Moore's documentaries.
With a side of mashed potatoes.
You just got to buy one of those shrink wrap machines. You buy the DVD, you watch it, and then you put it back in a shrink wrap.
Frank Nitti is over in the corner going, "Oh, don't do that, man." You monster.
Yeah. Oh no, our fans of the show should buy the movie and then try to return it to GameStop. So I just want to say, Bill Corbett, thanks so much for doing the show with
what
us.
What a pleasure, guys. It was nice spending some time with you.
And on a personal note, I'd just like to say Mystery Science 300 3000, a show it's probably so influential in my formative years, it took us several months to realize that we were just ripping you off on Chapo Trap House.
You Alinskyite.
Yeah.
I mean, as a true Alinskyite myself, I've naturally gravitated towards waking up at noon every day of my life. But the one day on a weekend I wouldn't do it as a child was when Mystery Science Theater was on at 9 on Comedy Central when I was a kid. And it was one of the things that broke my brain growing up.
Good. Yeah, again, I think we all have that in common. Yeah.
Another similarity. We are three puppets, except our strings are being pulled by Vladimir Putin instead of Comedy Central.
I'm glad we let you guys feel good about being weird. So. To borrow your trope.
Bill, thanks so much for hanging out with us and doing the show and watching this atrocious movie. Till next time, cheers, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I've got
got so sick and tired of listening to what you got to say. I decided I just got to stand up and say so. Sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of being treated this way. So I made my choice, gonna raise my voice and say it's time for you to pack up and go. You know who you are, you lied so and so. I'm gonna stand up and say so. I'm gonna stand up and say so. I'm gonna stand up and say so. We're gonna stand up and say so.